Josh and I decided to talk on parts of our liturgy book that we recited this morning. Those who greatly realize delusion are Buddhas, guidance in Zazen. When Josh first asked me what I would like to talk about today, I suggested a koan that's the shortest one that I know. Three words: stop the war. And Josh said, that's not a koan in our curriculum. I said, yes it is. It's one of those stop koans, you know, like extinguish the something or other, or stop the bells ringing. One of those. He said, no, it's not. So I looked it up, and sure enough, the only place I could find it was where I had originally seen it, which was in an article or a talk by John Tarrant. He had pulled it out of a collection of miscellaneous koans that we don't use in our curriculum. Not that one, anyway. Nevertheless, it being almost Memorial Day, I felt that it was appropriate. The other reason is that I once gave a talk on this same koan at Hank, which I count as the worst talk I've ever given. You may have another one in mind that was the worst, but that's the one that stands out for me. So I wanted to have a second go at it. And I think it's not all that far apart from this piece of liturgy. We'll see. We'll see if we get there. I first started thinking about this koan as a possibility earlier this week, this past week. I had rather a headache at work, and I was pretty sure I knew why I had the headache. It was Monday morning, and all weekend I had worried about this experiment that I needed to do. And I hadn't done it before. It was a little bit complicated, and it needed to get done right the first time. It had sort of been shoved at me because somebody else didn't have the time for it. And I'd worried and worried that I was going to screw it up, and so I'd given myself a headache. So I went ahead and set up the experiment, and it all went just fine. But I still was left with the headache. And I was a bit miffed about it, you know, like, who needs this? And I started thinking, well, maybe I can kind of listen into the thoughts that are coming up, that are giving me this headache, that are causing the tension. And then I can make it go away, you know? And I realized that this was actually a sort of waging war on my own thoughts, thought against thought, to make something be gone. It's interesting how many guises that process takes on, that all come to waging this internal war. And how interesting it is that we're able to do this. It never ceases to fascinate me that we can split ourselves up into the two factions. For me, it's often the bumbling one who usually has control of the body and does things out in the world and does them, gets them wrong, and maybe has some bad feelings about that too. And then the other one who would have known better if only the first one had listened and tries to straighten it out. That's the one I think of as Mom. And so it's always Mom and the poor fool inside going back and forth, having this kind of a battle. And I mean, how do we even do that? You know, I mean, who are they? I don't know. It's the strangest thing. And I came upon this quote by FDR. It's from the Franklin D. Roosevelt Memorial. He said, "More than an end to war, we want an end to the beginnings of all wars." I have the great luxury of never having been involved in a war, like a battle fought, battleground kind of war, or, you know, even in a country where that was going on. But the beginnings of all wars, I think we are all familiar with, or will be before long if we've been sitting for any period of time. And this is where this this recitation in our liturgy book comes in, those who greatly realize delusion are Buddhists, because the whole first section, as best I can tell, lists all kinds of ways that we use our minds in order to be aggressive toward our reality, either that which we perceive as outside of ourselves or what's going on internally. So we take our distorted ideas and desires and move toward the world, trying to find reality. We try to see it with our willpower and effort. We use our personal self to try to wake up, our individual actions, to make ourselves into Buddhas. So all these ways that we cause troubles for ourselves. And sometimes we notice these thoughts arising, that we're not happy with the way things are, and we see it, you know, that we want to change something. And curiously, sometimes we then layer something else on top of that. I shouldn't be having that thought. Or, oh, I wish that thought would go away, like when I had my headache. You know, I want those thoughts to go away. And then maybe we'll notice that we're doing that we're waging this war internally with our own thoughts. And then we'll wish that that would stop. And it's like this hall of mirrors that just goes on and on. You know, how do you bring it to an end? How do you stop the war? And even the decision to stop the war is kind of aggressive. You know, so it's just... there seems to be no exit from the spiral. And I suggest that the exit is simply one word out of the three-word koan, and that is to stop. Reb Anderson, in the piece just before this, in Guidance in Shikantaza, says, "The stillness of the Buddha sitting is not merely stillness. It is complete presence in stillness. There is not the slightest meddling. It is physical and mental non-interfering. It is thorough intimacy with whatever is happening. There's no sound of war there. No battles going on, even though everything can come and go, even those extra layers of thought that we see, that we think might be a problem." So this doesn't mean that we are in some way passive, that the invading hordes could come and take over, that we would be unable to defend ourselves in a real world, like outer battle. What it might mean is that we can more clearly see the way to proceed should that occur. Paul Reps, I came upon a quote by Paul Reps that refers to this koan. So he must have seen the koan as well. It does exist out there somewhere. And I leave it to you to decide whether or not he's come up with a good answer to the koan. He says, "Making a cup of green tea, I stop the war." Regardless what you think about that, Josh will carry on.
Says, "To practice is to awaken to the self that is part of all things, the subject of practice. The one who practices is not this personal self, but all beings. It is not we who engage in our practice, but rather Buddha who carries out Buddha's practice through us. The universe and us together that carries out the universe's and us practice. And this piece and the Reb Anderson piece that Kate was pointing to points to what the Shinshin Ming calls the heart of true and trusting. This sitting and bearing witness, this sitting in ceremonial observation of this truth that is already and inevitably present. Whether we see it or don't see it, whether we're having thoughts that are a problem or not a problem, whether it's the bumbling one or the mom who appears in our mind shouting at us. Even as that is happening, and that very happening itself is Buddha carrying out Buddha's practice through us. And this giving up of ownership of me, mine, my practice, my zazen, my mind, this giving up of ownership of it. And it's not even that we're giving up ownership. It's giving over our false certainty in ownership. And entrusting all of it, entrusting ourselves, entrusting our mind to the universe to the universe, this moment to this moment. This is the practice of Zazen. And I think this line that reminds us Zazen is not a matter of individual actions or experiences emerging from individual willpower or effort. This line invites us to stop the war on our Zazen. It's not a matter of your actions or your experiences. It's not a matter of what you're doing or how it's going for you. And that doesn't mean that it's nothing. And it doesn't mean that it's unimportant. And it doesn't mean that it's not utterly essential to spend a certain amount of your time in life doing this mysterious thing called Zazen. One of my kind of persistent fears in practice and complaints about my own practice is that I was really sure I'm not getting it. I am not getting enlightened. Whatever enlightened is, I am not getting it. And what I really like about this piece is it says really clearly, yeah, you're right. You are not. The reason you're so sure you're not getting it is because it's not you who gets it. There is no separate individual who practices Zazen and becomes enlightened. So in this vast, seamless whole that is the universe and me and you and everyone and everything together, in this vast, seamless whole of a universe, there's a little piece of it that's complaining that it's not the whole universe. Ah! God, I'm not enlightened. I don't have the entirety of the universe in my little mind. And And the universe, as the Buddha's practice, includes that little complaint too. We don't personally become a Buddha, but rather awaken to the reality that from the beginning we are living Buddha's life. Awaken to the reality that from the beginning, just this is it, always, continually manifesting. And we can do great harm in the world when we've reached the conclusion that we have become a Buddha. So what a relief. What a relief that we don't. And all of the feelings that arise for us that really clearly demonstrate that I am clearly not a Buddha. How generous and protective and supportive of this Buddha's practice those thoughts are. And by this mysterious practice of entrusting the universe to the universe, Buddha's practice to Buddha's practice, by doing that, we can start to find more flexibility in navigating the world of form, the world of people, the world of relationships and jobs and fears and desires and longings and griefs. We start to be able to receive those things in a more spacious frame. We start to be able to interact with them more skillfully. We start to be able to actualize being the person that we mean to be to the best of our ability, following our values, the Bodhisattva vows. We start to be able to do this even amid the arising of fear and doubt and struggle. Enlightenment is not the self awakening to reality, but Zazen awakening to Zazen. Dharma awakening to Dharma. Buddha awakening to Buddha. And you know, often people come in and they will tell me, so, doing Shikantaza, and it's not going that well. I'm doing Shikantaza, and it's going really great. And I often inquire, how do you know? And the invitation here is to greatly realize delusion. And don't imagine that greatly realizing delusion is a special kind of realizing delusion. Oh man, I realize delusion, but I gotta do it greatly. Am I just gonna realize the hell out of that delusion? And even realizing delusion, delusion arises like it's just the universe arising. It's just the universe arising. These things we call delusion, which sounds so pejorative, actually are just the universe. They're just facets. They're sparkles bubbles, flowers in air. All of it just unfolding. All of this is just the universe minding its own business. Let yourself be included. So now we want to invite you to sit comfortably if you aren't already, and come forth with resonances or comments or questions or explorations. Wars.
Yes. So, I feel like something of an expert on the subject of fighting for internal wars. I don't know about the answer of drinking a cup of green tea. That may be a fine answer, but it's not the one that comes up for me. Nor is it stop. The end of what Josh was saying about greatly realizing delusion, I think, is the answer that resonates for me, is that it's really realizing in the sense of, you know, seeing what is going on. And I was really relating to what you were talking about, Kate, about the multiple layers of this. And you notice, you know, that this battle's going on, and then I want to stop the battle. And I notice that I want to stop the battle, and I want to stop the stopping of it. And that is an endless process. And so my answer to it, how do I stop? I often find myself in my head shouting at myself to stop. And I just stop, and just really participating in this delusion of waging war and of the possibility of stopping and just really getting into the whole thing. And I kind of wear myself out. Is my answer, I guess. I just I don't try to stop. I just let it be whatever level it is, and fully participate in it, and let it go however it goes. And usually, I find that it changes, just like everything else is constantly changing. My internal experience is constantly changing, and it's the resistance to what's already here is the thing that really throws the fuel on. Constant idea that what's here now is wrong. You know, that's my basic standpoint on my internal self is that
this truth I hold to be self-evident.
Right.
What's here is wrong.
Right. What is here is wrong, and I got to do something about it. And that's the thing that fuels that whole process.
That does clarify the stop a little bit more. What I guess what I was pointing to, and maybe not so very clearly, is not to be adding on intentionally to that layer after layer after layer. And the stopping that I was recognizing for myself was one where the scene opens up to include all of that. And
the stopping that you described, this is not the stopping of the American Heritage Dictionary. This is the stop of stopping the sound of the temple bell. And we don't stop the sound of the temple bell like this. That's not Zen stopping. The Zen stopping And so that is the Zen stopping of the war that you're describing so vividly.
in your emphatic agreement with Kate.
So I remember a retreat from North Wind, and it was a hell realm, sheer hell realm for three straight days. Yeah, it was that one. I remember that. We've all had it. We've all gone on that one. I mean, just interview after interview of going in and talking with the teachers about how this was hell in a series of different narratives. I remember on Sunday morning being just completely and thoroughly wiped out from my own war. I was sitting in the chair waiting to go in for Sunday morning's interview and had no idea what I could, I was at that place where, you know, what is it, the hot iron ball or whatever, like nothing could be done anymore, just that was it. And I didn't know what I was going to say when I went in for the interview. Like, I told every story I could think of. I had no resolution. It was just, there was nothing further to do with this situation. So I walked in to see the teacher, and I just like spontaneously bowed all the way to the ground and lifted my hands up over my head, and I looked up, and it was Melissa, and she looked at me, and instantly tears just ran down her face. She was just crying in the moment from my finally having bowed.
Back to that internal trust, which somehow not formed or not.
And you're saying you one piece of what you said was, and of course I can't trust myself. And in a certain way, that is akin to the there is no separate self who gets enlightened. And so, how can you trust? How can you entrust yourself to this thing that includes but isn't yourself? This is the heart of your entrusting. This is our practice. And so saying, boy, I am really not trustworthy, is just as vividly clear as boy, I am really not enlightened. And those are also these glorious delusions to be completely realized greatly.
I have two questions. I think they're related. You spoke about living Buddha's life. Whatever comes up is not your responsibility. And one of the things that I find attractive about this practice is that there is responsibility. This is my life, and I am responsible for my actions.
So. Okay.
Yeah, and this is the simultaneous truths. Fully responsible. And not just responsible for your actions, responsible for the whole catastrophe.
Oh,
it's on you.
And this
responsibility is part of how we save all beings. This is the thing that enables saving all beings to be possible. So yes, fully responsible. And not, and there's just causes and conditions in this one inclusive thing that is universe and us. Which Nick will explain in just a moment.
So, is that the difference? It's just a little name here in my mind.
I don't love that language, and I also don't love Shinryu Suzuki's language of there's the self and then there's the self. That is complicated, you know, and so there's, because we can also say there's the little not me, and then there's the big not me, and in fact it's all not me. And this is one of the things that the Buddha says in the Pali Canon. You know, for each thing that arises, to see it as not me, not mine. And you're pointing out that this can also become a hey, yeah, not me. Yeah, sorry, that was just some anger. It's not me. It's nothing to do with me. Sorry, suck it up. Which is not our Dharma practice. So fully taking responsibility for our actions, fully taking responsibility for our intentions, fully taking responsibility for our karma, all the ancient twisted karma since of old, taking responsibility, being at one with it now, and again returning to our clarified intentions. This is all the practice. and there is no separate individual who practices Zen and becomes enlightened.
My son used to be a college hockey fan, and it's traditional, apparently, in college hockey games, you try and sit behind the goal with the visiting team, and should the goalie let in a soft goal, you start to chant, "It's all your fault." this is quite annoying. And he was telling me this one day, and I suddenly realized that actually there was a point here. It really was all your fault. So the whole damn mess is indeed your fault. Right. So that's what I'd say to my
And this is why we all atone for the beginningless karma that Mike has created.
God, I've been looking for a scapegoat.
I appreciated your encouraging us not to start a new war on the grounds of not being able to realize it. Because I was already going there, so thank you for that. But on the other side of that, aren't there to realize delusion, aren't there still needs and still needs? Because when I think about when I'm really part of the delusion, I realize it's really, really angry. I couldn't stop it long enough to realize that I was in this, and the Zen practice has been particularly helpful in giving me that.
What kind of practice?
This stuff.
The Zen practice.
The Zen practice.
So it turned out that was part of us. What was the word you used? The skillful means.
Skillful means.
Yeah.
And I mean, I heard that in Mike's story about, suddenly knowing about that, something maybe not conscious. I was helping a guy in the street who fell on his bicycle, and he's drunk as he can be and still be conscious. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that he wasn't going to be able to realize that he needed help and that he was able to get more sober. That guy's up in my mind is there in the last couple of days. And so isn't there some room for some effort and some practice?
Yeah. You may not know this about me, but I actually like Zen, and I in my own personal life, I practice Zen, and I use some of the tools of that tradition. And sometimes the community of Zen practitioners who I sit with, sometimes we come together to sit and do this this just mysterious thing, and I'd urge you to drop by sometime. So all of this is skillful means. And all of this is included, and the entirety of the tradition is the skillful means in the support of pointing us at this vast, inconceivable source, and the practice of sitting with ourselves, and the practice of, if we're working with the breath, seeing when we're doing anything other than working with the breath, unhooking and returning. That is honing the very skill of being able to flexibly meet the hell being when it arises, without, as what's his name,
Mike.
Guide close to silent illumination. Somebody. What's
Rabbi Anderson?
No,
not Rabbi Anderson.
The ancient guy Who we love. All right. Cultivating the Empty Sky, Hongzhi. Yes. Thank you. Hongzhi says, so to be able to meet the hell, to be able to meet each speck of dust without becoming its partner. To be able to meet the arising of these hell beings without becoming their partner. And this is all skillful means. And so I'm not saying, so throw away everything, don't do Zazen, don't read Zen books, don't reflect on the Dharma, don't try to follow the precepts, don't try to be the person you mean to. I'm not saying that. And to the extent that I'm saying that there is a thing that's not that, it's in the context of we're already actualizing all of these supports. Yeah.
Can I add a word? So, to me, the essential point here seems to be that we need to make an effort, but not with a result in mind. So if you're aimed towards something, that's because you want to change what is now toward that, to be that better thing, that's the war, right? But if you're just making an effort and allowing things to be what they are, then as a result, and then make another effort, and then another, it has a different flavor to it. That's the skillful means as I see it. And that's what we cultivate here in our city. Not aimed at a result, but just making an effort.
The effort making is whole and complete in itself. And yeah. And the effort making is an intention, a disposition of heart. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing we're either doing or not doing. Hard to talk about, and I really appreciate people who, and it's so easy for us to fall on one side, and so really important to give voices to these other pieces, lest it get unbalanced.
Good, Marie in the back.
I'm
maybe is sort of not taking it personally, or not reacting personally. Yeah.
And this is an important element of how we cease from harm, which is not an endpoint we can ever arrive at. And so noticing, and this is what we're practicing in Zazen, noticing all the way we're adding fuels onto the fires of aversion, fuels onto the fires of grasping, fuels onto the fire of stories we're telling ourselves. And in Zazen, what we're practicing is just desisting from adding additional logs onto those fires. And it doesn't mean the fires go right out. But it means we're stopping, keeping them going. And then they go out in their time. Or they don't go out. But we're not prolonging it. And then we start a new fire, and we start adding sticks onto that new fire, and then we notice. And this is exactly what we are practicing. This is the skill of mind we are practicing with our zazen.
Not doing this because we want to get there, we don't want to be here. So why do we do that? Why would we do anything if we don't want to be here or want to be there? Those seem to be the motivations in mind. The basic motivations, in my experience, I have for doing almost anything is that I don't want to be here or I want to be over there.
No problem with that. To have those desires and to see that that's so, and you know, even responding to a perceived need, you know, we are trying to make better what we see, but letting go of the results, not it must end up this way, that's where the trouble's generated, and if it doesn't, then we try even harder to get it to be this way. Letting go of the result, try again. You're welcome to do that. Let go.
And amid this trying, this really honorable trying, not falling into the trap of if only, the trap of, okay, if I could just only get that, if I could just only be this way, if I could just only have this new job or this new relationship or this new situation, then I would be able. So, and because it's the arising, the invitation of practice is to, in this moment right now, work with the arising of that if only about the future, rather than taking that if only as a truth and a command and going out and trying to do what this thing is telling us to do without examining.
So I also like what you've been saying about how in making the right effort we come here and find the support of one another to help us make the effort. And it's funny because I was thinking about kind of what you said about like the skillful means of the bow. I didn't invent that. You know, like that, we practice bowing over and over and over ritually, again and again and again. And my mind is so thick that it takes years of practice and, you know, being pounded and pounded by my own habit energy before I finally go, why don't I just bow? Right, like, and so it's funny, like the skillful means are so provided for us in this practice and so built into the practice. The other thing that I remember Hanbo really affected me was there's something also about making a really an effort, and then I think, hey, this is kind of how I'm hearing what you're saying, I don't know if this makes sense to you, but like just receiving. You know, like you make the effort and your intention is set at, I'm going to get across the room. But you trip. What do? You receive your fall. Like, you have to fall. You just have to receive what happens, however, we have no choice. There's the Buddha in that receiving.
Dogen says, as long as there is bowing, the Dharma will not diminish.
What's coming up for me is this, and I've heard the war, stop the war, right? I can relate, of course, but I'll tell you, of course, I can relate to the internal wars. I also thought about seeing that the seed of the wars with others, the thoughts that arise that make me put somebody in a certain category or put a label on them that is not very nice, and then that colors my thinking is already colored, and then my actions follow that. I start treating that person that way. So those were the wars that, you know, in relationships that came to my mind. And I was thinking about Alan's question and about skillful means, and I thought about what I've heard us talk about as choiceful actions. You know, and so this being able to see the seed of the war, the thought that, God, that guy is just such a jerk, you know, as an example, right? And then having sometimes, first of all, receiving the gift of actually being able to see that thought, and then the gift of being able to choose whether to speak or act on that, right? That's what came to my mind. So I think that skillful means in terms of practice to just practice. And then I think there's, I hear intention, yes, about I want to do less harm. And then I also hear, it sounds like decision or choice. You know, I could see the thought, jerk, right? And I could still behave like a jerk back, right? Or I could, you know, sometimes, I'm saying sometimes I can't choose, but sometimes I do get to choose. And then I could not say what I was going to say. So I could stop that war from even starting, right? I may still have the one internally, but haven't started the external.
Not to imagine that there is some zero prime beginning thought that we can ever catch. Mm-hmm. Wherever we find it is the beginning. Sometimes the beginning's in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And I think the only real stopping of it is to, the reason that it's the Zen kind of stop, I mean, how I make sense of that, which means it goes, you know? is so that we can see it in its entirety, because there's no way to see through it unless you can really, really see it. It's like that old thing about the rope and the snake. You know, you're walking along the road and you see a snake and, so afraid of it. And then you realize, oh, it's not a snake, it's just a rope. You can never be afraid of it again, right? You've seen exactly what it is. You know it through and through. It's just a rope. And it's the same way with these thoughts that come up that drive us to war, that we see them for what they really are, thoughts arising in our minds, and they can never make us go after that idiot again.
And the just a rope quality that we see is the, oh, that's just aversion. Oh, that's just grasping. Oh, that's just stories. And with those things, the rope can scare us again a second time, but
different rope.
Rope. Right. A new rope. There's a whole series of ropes, and each time we think it's 10,000 snakes in front of us, and every time we're sure it's going to be a snake, but each time it's a rope, and then we see another one, and it's definitely a snake this time, right? But it turns out it's just aversion again. Yeah. Thank you, everyone.